go, but that many times the history is rich, though we easily forget how a meme can take hold and grab you, how it can spread out like a net, and everything can change so quick. They'll say we are lost or we're dreaming, or they'll make a dream for us. They'll try to come up with a good story about why we belong at the back of the bus, about why we belong in this position, about how we don't know what we meant, about how there most certainly isn't any such thing as the 99%, but everything can change so quick. Everything can change so quick.
KSKQ 89.5 FM, Ashland, Oregon, your community radio station. It is the 1st of June, 10 a.m. That means it's time for the weekly lowdown. We're getting ready for an exciting interview here in a few minutes, so Alex and I will be right back. But first, we're going to let you listen to the Climate Connection, a couple of minutes while we get set up for the next show.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Wasted fruit and vegetables are a big problem in the U.S. How big? Big enough to fill 4 football stadiums to the brim each year. Many perfectly edible fruits and vegetables never even make it to the grocery store, simply because they're blemished or the wrong color or shape. So Evan Lutz started a company called Hungry Harvest that buys this otherwise perfectly good produce from local farms and wholesalers.
We box that stuff up into perfectly delicious variety boxes and then deliver that to subscribers' doors once a week year-round for discounted prices.
Unlike other food rescue groups, which rely on donations, Hungry Harvest charges for each box. The profit pays for the business and allows them to donate meals to people in need.
We're not doing this to make money, but we are doing this to make a huge impact across the United States, and we think the for-profit model is a much more sustainable way of doing that than the nonprofit model.
Since it launched in 2014, Hungry Harvest has prevented more than 500,000 pounds of produce from ending up in the landfill. And with 3,000 subscribers each receiving a box of food and twice as many on the wait list, the company is proving that looks aren't everything. Less than perfect fruit and vegetables still taste delicious. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Don't you know that talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper? Don't you know that talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper? While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds whisper. Poor people gonna rise up and get their share. Poor people gonna rise up and take what's theirs. Don't you know you better run, run, run. Talking about a revolution. the dose of servers, armies of salvation. Wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds a whisper. And finally the tables are starting to turn, talking about a revolution. Talking about a revolution, oh no. Talking about a revolution, oh no. Talking about a revolution.
All right. Well, you're listening to 89.5 KSKQ FM in Ashland, Oregon, and throughout the Rogue Valley. Today, we got two very special guests in the building. Colin Davis, the newest president of the Associated Students of Southern Oregon University, and Tyler Takeshita, his vice president. Thank you guys so much for being here.
Hey, hey man. Thank you so much for having us on today.
Excited to be here.
So, there has been a little bit of controversy over your guys' election. For the listeners who may not have heard about this, there were grievances filed about your two guys' campaign. One was for somebody leaving flyers in the Stevenson Union building, while the other one was for taking promotional photos during your office hours. As a result, originally the ASSOU took away 40-something votes from you guys, and then they retracted that decision. Do you guys feel that you were treated fairly throughout that process?
I would say definitely yes. The whole process took a really long time, but it's ultimately there to be the most fair it can possibly be. So we're really happy with the outcome. We think that it was really, really fair.
Yeah, definitely 9 hours of meetings last week wasn't the most fun thing to go through, but it was a process that was needed, and they really broke down every single part of our rules, and which weren't the most clear, which we're trying to work on for this next year. So we're really happy with the results, and we're super happy to be president and vice president this year.
So you just mentioned that the rules weren't clear. Did you fully understand the rules that you both were accused of breaking?
Yeah, I believe we understood the rules. At the time, we just had made, or I had personally made a mistake of campaigning for those 23 minutes during my office hours, which really, they said, brought my ethics into the equation, that I wouldn't be an ethical president. So that was their big question about me as to whether my campaign was still valid or not.
And you completely understood those rules?
After the fact, completely, yes.
Yeah, I would say the one thing that was a little bit unclear to us regarding the first charge against us for the flyers being misplaced in unsanctioned zones, it wasn't too clear that we had to take the due diligence to, you know, make sure that everything wasn't in those unsanctioned zones. Obviously, we should have in hindsight, but like we said in the meetings, you know, we didn't expect any flyers to be in unsanctioned zones, so we didn't really think to check to see if they were lying around there.
So one thing that one of the competitors, one of the vice president candidate of the runner-up said in the Siskiyou was, when flyers are found multiple times in the same place, it seems like more of a strategic move. You guys did not place flyers in the same place, even though they were found multiple times throughout the campaign, which was a very short campaign, in the same location, according to this gentleman.
Yeah, I think with that, they were found on top of water fountains. And with what I did for my campaigning was I handed out flyers out in front of the SU. And I feel like the water fountain was a popular drop-off spot for that material, because if somebody didn't want it, that's an easy place for them to go put it down, and probably a hot spot for people to go to in the SU when they want to drink.
Okay, so going forward, now that you guys are president, one key issue is connecting with the current student government to get things to pass. The student government voted more heavily in favor of Emily. It was clear to see, and Emily being the runner-up, it was clear to see from many students campaigning on their behalf on the streets that a lot large population were supporting her. And with some students feeling that this election process may have been unfair, do you feel like it's going to be hard for you to connect with some of the student government members that may have not wanted you guys in office?
I think that the student government that we're working with, first and foremost, are really professional. Regardless of their affiliation in this upcoming or this past election, I'm confident that they're willing to get stuff done because that's what they're all about. So we're really looking forward to establishing a more professional rapport with those people and move forward and try to get things done for SOU.
And how will you guys go about trying to bridge gaps and then maybe some people who feel like this process wasn't the fairest towards the candidates that they wanted to win?
As far as the elections?
Yes.
I guess bridging the gap in the elections. I know that a lot of the stuff that was discussed in those meetings that we're at was that we need to have more explicit language of like, you do this, this will happen to you stuff. So maybe that can kind of, you know, getting rid of some of that obscurity would really help the upcoming elections for like next year and the years to come.
Yeah, I think with our current student government right now, everyone's bought in to do the best they possibly can. And I really don't think any prior outcomes are going to affect what's going to happen to us next year.
So as the new ASSOU president, for the last couple cycles, we've seen tuition increases year after year. As the student body president and the vice president, will you guys follow this trend? Will during your reign, will we likely see tuition increases?
So I know that there is a tuition increase that was passed recently without our approval. I mean, we weren't a part of the process, but it's for the new athletic complex that we're getting, and they're looking to, I don't know if it's $90, or do you know the specifics of it, Colin?
Yeah, I think it's right around $90 for the next couple years to make sure that there was the Athletic and Recreation Center, which used to be McNeil, which was considered structurally unsound. So they decided, instead of just fixing that one problem in a building that had a multitude of issues, they decided to tear it all the way down and rebuild it and give the students a new rec center, which I think is going to draw a lot of new students to our university, because right now some of our facilities aren't at the standard that a lot of other universities have them. So what we want to do is provide the best possible things that we can for our students. And I think by having this new rec center and this new athletic facility, we're going to be able to do that. And by raising the tuition, obviously it's a burden that we're going to take. But what is going to happen is all the students that are paying for it right now and have paid for it over the past 2 years are going to have be able to use it for the first 2 years that it's open once it is finished.
Yeah, but with that being said, you know, that $90 increase that's coming down the pike was not, you know, a direct result of our presidency. So it might be during our year, but it's not, you know, necessarily associated directly with us. But for now, we don't have any plans to raise tuition. So, yeah.
So if it came down to it, when you're talking to the different boards at the schools and they are talking to you about cutting possible programs or raising tuition as options for keeping the school rolling, would you guys lean more towards the option of cutting programs, or would you lean more towards the option of raising tuition?
I think we really have to get a pulse on the student body at that point to see, you know, the importance of the program as it is, as it relates to the student population, whether or not it is something that is, you know, a necessary cut, or if it's something that we have to save in order to keep students happy. I think what we're really going to try to do is echo what the students want us to do and just try to act appropriately.
Yeah, very true on that point. Similar to how our physics program was cut a few years ago, it affected such a small group of students that we didn't see, or the student government at the time didn't see fit to keep it in our school government. And so I think it really depends on how many students we are affecting with that program to really decide if that's worth it for our school to pay for.
And different presidencies have had different relations with the unions on campus. As the next student body president, what will you do to reach out to the unions, if you even will reach out at all?
I mean, no, that's one of the biggest parts of my whole campaign is I think that right now our school is kind of separated into four different groups. We have our student or we have a Stevenson Union and all the activities that go on in there. We have our housing, like our RHH and our NIHA, and all of the students that live in our housing, which are probably make up the largest group on our campus that can be actively reached. And then we have our athletics, which is probably our easiest group of students to contact, because if you buy in a coach on something, that they can go and tell their students, like, hey, we want this to happen. And then finally, we have our commuter students who come to school, go home, and then really don't have much experience with our school other than that. And what we want to try to do is create things where all four of those groups can work together and have bigger events, so more students will be able to enjoy all of the things that we have to offer on this campus.
So, as a student who's been here for 3 years since Tommy Letchworth was president, I've heard from just about every candidate who's ran something similar to, we're going to bridge gaps at school, we're going to unite the school. What specifically are you offering that other candidates have not pursued? Other presidents have not pursued?
I know. So our big thing is try to get, not our big thing, but one of the things that we'd like to do is try to get more clubs involved and kind of promote clubs on campus. I can't speak too much on that presidency 3 years ago because my memory doesn't really serve exactly what he wanted to do. But that's one of the things that we want to do. Obviously, it's really important to bridge the gaps. I know that they were talking about bridging the gaps between the student body and, you know, the administration. That's really important, and we're going to do our best to do that. But I think one of the things that separates us also is that we want to really promote clubs and organizations on campus so that they have a strong foothold and are able to communicate and do more for our student body.
So earlier you mentioned that there's four different aspects of the student body, and one of them being commuter students who don't really participate too much in clubs and other things. They just kind of go to school and they go home. By focusing on clubs, isn't that kind of leaving them out of the mix of people that you would want to advocate for?
I think that by promoting the clubs that we have, it gives those commuter students an opportunity to see what we really can promote. Right now, I just feel like there's so many different things happening that not enough get the voice that they deserve. And with those commuter students, you have to sell to them that we have stuff that's worth going to. And if you can't do that, then they're obviously not going to come. So by us providing that platform for those clubs to have, I think that's going to increase the involvement of our commuter students.
So very late last year, you, Colin Davis, voted to approve of a resolution saying that as the ASSOU, you support the $13.15 minimum wage campaign. As students, we are coming out into not the best economic circumstances, and traditionally, as students, we would be the people taking those slightly above minimum wage paying jobs. So as a member of the student government, the group that is supposed to represent the students, why did you guys decide to support this?
If I'm not mistaken, I believe that was for our students on campus with on-campus jobs. And obviously, we want our students on campus to have the most opportunity possible. And we felt that for that, having that $13.50 minimum wage for our student workers gave them the most opportunity to succeed in school, whether that be paying for their classes, paying for rent, or paying for their books. A little extra money goes a long way in the pockets of our students.
So as the next president of ASSOU and the vice president, how do you see yourself working in the future with the campaigns that are currently in process? What do you foresee being something that you guys work hard to continue on? And what do you predict may be something that doesn't get taken up next year? And I know it's not only up in your hands, but
Yeah. You know, we're in the process of transitioning right now. We're trying to get everyone's workload and, you know, kind of take it on our own. So we haven't given too much thought to exactly what we want to really push and what we want to get rid of. I think that's something that we're probably going to talk about this summer. But for now, I think a lot of the work that, you know, ASSEU is doing is worth continuing. They're a really strong administration, and so a lot of their programs and campaigns have been really successful. I don't know. I can't speak for Colin. I don't know if you have anything that you particularly want to continue. But like I said, for me at least, it's just getting all this before we really put our foot on the ground and say, this is what we're going to do. I think it'd be prudent to get all of that transition material and really know what's going on before we move forward.
I mean, I think definitely coming up into an election year is really important to get our students out to vote. And our vote campaign this year did an amazing job. I believe registering over 800 students on our campus to vote, mm-hmm. and collecting ballots after that. And by doing that, it allows our students to have a greater voice in not only our community, but our whole entire country, which is really important. And also including that, I think another great campaign that was run this year was, I believe it was Take Back the Tap campaign, which was run by our ECOS Center, which is one of our resource centers here on campus. And the main motivation of that was to stop the sale of non-reusable water bottles on our campus. And by doing that, we'd have more water bottle refill stations in our school buildings. And I just think that's a great thing for all of our students to have, because obviously water is important to a healthy student, and a healthy student is a happy student.
So you mentioned the voter vote campaign. When you guys, next year, when you guys are sitting in the office, you'll be here during an election year. You won't have too much time between the start of fall term and the general elections. Do you guys, I know Associated Students of Southern Oregon University is a nonpartisan group, but do you guys plan on doing anything to make the most of it and push student involvement in the elections to the fullest when you guys are sitting in office during fall term?
I think anything that we can do to encourage students to vote is obviously really important. As you mentioned, obviously in a nonpartisan way, you know, we let students think for themselves. But yeah, I think even if it's for a week, or I don't know the exact timeline, but anything that we can do to get one more person to vote, I think is really worth it.
Very true.
Do you guys, as a person who's reported on different issues in the school, one thing I found out very quickly is the whole process of the student government is insanely complicated. It's hard for anyone to wrap their head around all the processes. How has it been the last week, 2 weeks, to learn about everything you need to do as president and vice president of the Associated Students of Southern Oregon University?
Yeah, so I think we just really got a taste of the tip of the iceberg. All the stuff that we really got to know well over this past couple weeks, and what was it, 10 hours of meetings, was just the campaign rules. We're still, you know, trying to learn, and like I talked about transition materials, trying to learn what exactly to do, what our responsibilities are as president and vice president. You know, these rules are here for a really important reason, to keep everything in check and everything ordered and structured. But yeah, man, it's been a wild ride this past couple of weeks, and it's just for the campaign and election rules that we really got to familiarize ourselves with. So it's going to be interesting moving forward.
All right, and I just want to invite anyone who's in their car listening right now, if you feel like you want to get something off your chest, if you want to ask these two individuals something yourself, feel free to give us a call. The phone number is 541-482-3999. So if you have any kind of question you ask, if you want to speak your mind, if you just want to tell all three of us we're a bunch of idiots, call us at 541-482-3999. So there has been, throughout colleges around the country, there has been debates over private industries taking pieces of the college. I talked to Tori Uehara a little bit about this a couple of weeks ago, but for example, instead of SLU running its own bookstore, having Barnes & Noble be a part of it, having not having a Pacific SOU ran dining facility. As the student body president and vice president, will you be against future decisions like that or not? Or is it something that you guys are currently undecided on?
I mean, we haven't really brought up that subject a ton, but I think whatever is best for our school is mm-hmm. best for us. And if that be that we're contracting out to different companies like Barnes & Noble or Aviance for our food, I do think that that's the best decision that we can make.
And how would you determine what's best for the school? Are you going to just do student polls on it? Are you going to look at the hard financial numbers? How would you determine that?
I think it's a mixture of the things. Obviously, the student voice is really important. But if our director of finance says that it's infeasible, then it's unlikely that we will move forward. So we're going to try to put together a cabinet, a team of people that we trust to do their job really, really well. And so, with those trusted advisors and the students and our own opinions on the things and, all the different avenues through which we can get input, it's just going to be kind of a mixing melting pot of opinions to try to get to our decision.
So what issues, and I kind of asked you guys about this a little bit earlier, but what issues are you guys passionate about? What made you guys decide, hey, I would be the best president and vice president of the university? What are you guys doing to make a change from the status quo?
I really think that keeping students on our campus is important. And to keep students on our campus, we have to have a reason for them to stay here. And what I really want to push next year is having the best possible experience for our students. And whether that be through bigger events, more things going on our campus, whatever we can do to create a greater student life for our students and have them stay here. Right now, I think our retention rate for a freshman is something around 60%, and that isn't where we want it to be. We obviously want to have every student that comes here, graduate 4 years later. Like, that's our end goal, and we believe that we can do a better job of that by providing better amenities for our students.
And what do you think are the contributing factors in students deciding to leave, to decide not to complete their entire university career here?
I mean, there's a lot of different factors that involve in that. Obviously, a lot financially. Some could be family issues, things like that. But what we want to avoid is students that leave SOU because they don't feel like they're having enough fun. Like, we want to create the most fun environment possible, and we really think that we can do a better job of that. Where student government in the past hasn't made that a focus, we want to make that a focus for us this next year in creating the best college experience possible.
And as the new president and vice president, how are you guys going to go about making the most fun college experience possible?
So on that, one thing that we're trying to plan right now that obviously is still a couple steps away from actually being even in the works is we're talking about having a concert our first weekend of school for this next year. So that's like our October 1st. We have a home football game that day, so obviously we hope that people would stay for over the weekend, where a lot of students end up either going home or somewhere else. We want to have students stay for the weekend, end up having fun either at a football game, whatever they choose to that day, and then that night be able to have a concert that students can go out to and brag to their friends that are at other universities. They're on their Snapchat stories taking videos and stuff, and they're like, hey, we're having a great time. We want to be able to provide that great time for these students.
So do you think, and I'm sorry if I cut you off, Tyler,
yeah, no worries.
But do you think that through students using social media and having certain hashtags and things like that, it's basically the way that we should go about marketing our school to potential new students or to potential transfers?
I think to not use social media would be kind of ill-advised. Social media is such a explosive market, or just an explosive idea right now. I think we should definitely utilize it. I'm sure there are people, but I know a lot of people who use social media. And so if we can tap into that and tap into that community that's been built over the past, I don't know how many, 5-10 years, I think it can only be helpful.
And earlier, before the interview, I was talking to you a little bit about social media and your presidential campaign. Can you kind of speak a little bit to what were your thoughts about running this campaign and why do you feel it was successful enough for you to win?
I mean, a picture speaks a thousand words, and Julius Rucker, one of my good friends, was able to take pictures for us before our campaign started, and I believe that that really helped us with our campaign. Like, it showed that, hey, like, we wore suits and stuff, like, you have the pictures there. It not only showed, like, hey, we're professional people, like, we're going to get the job done for you, but we're also fun. And I think appearance is a really big thing in being a leader. It's appearance and intelligence. And if we can appear that we're going to be good leaders, I think that means a lot to us, is just people having confidence in us. And the more that we can show that, I think the more successful that we can be.
On the flip side of that, social media also kind of got us in hot water with these recent allegations. So I just kind of want to address that. I think we should definitely learn our lesson from social media and learn to tread lightly on the issue, because once you put something out there, it's there forever. So this whole situation has definitely given us some insight on the process, and to know that, you know, really, really kind of make sure that what we're saying is what we want to stand by forever, because it's the potential to be there forever. So it's really made our process much more deliberative.
And I was trying to not bring that issue back up, but do you feel like it was a mistake to take that photo and put it on social media?
I mean, yes. Hindsight's obviously 20/20 there, where I made a mistake, and if I had the opportunity to do it again, I wouldn't. But I think it would have just been the timing, not the picture in general. I just would have done it, you know, 27 minutes later.
And for people that may not know what I'm talking about the photo that got them into hot water. It was taken during Colin Davis's office hour times, saying, come out and you say the exact
caption? It was like to take a picture. Yeah. We had made up these t-shirts, and we were just trying to get everybody to get out there to take a picture with us at 12:30. And then apparently Colin had posted a picture at 11:37, something like that, during his office hours. And so that was an issue of contention, or point of contention, because in the election bylaws, it says that you are not allowed to campaign during ASSOU, or that something that conflicts with your ASSOU obligations. Colin, being a senator, had office hours during that time, and one of his obligations as an ASSOU senator was to be attending or at his office hours. And so there was a conflict there, and that was the breach of the rules that we ultimately had this 10-hour debate over.
So, Colin, can you tell us a little bit about why weren't you there in your office during that time? Why were you, amongst other things, taking that photo?
It was a mistake on my part. I didn't remember the rule at that point, and I had just come off an exit meeting with my coach, and I was just kind of like, you know, I'm ready to get out of here, and I did, and I made that mistake, and obviously ended up almost losing my presidency over it. So definitely have learned from that, and it's been a learning experience for sure.
And this isn't so much of a political question, but when you were unsure of whether or not you would be able to actually be president, if the election committee would allow both of you guys to go into office, how did you feel during those meetings when it was still up in the air?
I think more than anything, after I made the mistake, I felt like I let Tyler down, because Tyler obviously had put a lot of work into the campaign, and I was the one that had made the mistake. And not only that, but all the students that had voted for me, if my campaign would have been suspended, I feel like I would have silenced their voices for something that I did, which obviously I would have felt horrible about.
Yeah, and me personally, I just kind of took it for what it was. You know, there's no point crying over spilled milk, to use that expression. So I just kind of thought, you know, this is what the situation we're presented with. How can we best handle it? And so obviously I was really disappointed at the prospect of losing the election. But I think Colin and I just really both tried to keep cool heads and just kind of handle the situation as it came to us.
And one thing that, and I apologize in advance for bringing up the same person twice, but one thing that the vice president of the runner-up, Valerio, said was the ruling was a disservice to all candidates, including Colin. Either he's disqualified or not. And if not, then what's going to happen? How would you guys respond to that?
So I don't know if this was before the meeting or after the meeting of the Judicial Committee meeting, but it was Ricardo, I believe, who thought that because we broke this rule, he thought it was a major enough infraction to completely delegitimize or invalidate our election. And so the Judicial Committee, based on the rules that they had in front of them, tried to trot that out for 5 hours that it took. Ultimately, they came to the decision where the key word that kept our election valid was the word irrevocable. So the bylaw says that the infraction has to irrevocably change the outcome of the election. And so the Judicial Committee believed that the campaigning during office hours and the misplacement of flyers did not irrevocably change the outcome of the election. And so they also debated the word outcome, whether that meant one vote or the entire, the result of the election. And so there was a lot of debating over those like conceptual ideas. But ultimately it came down to the idea that these infractions did not change the entire outcome of the election so much that it can never be fixed. And so, I think that's what Ricardo was speaking about. He thought that it was enough to do it. The Judicial Committee didn't agree. But I think this also sheds light on the fact that we need to have much clearer rules and much more clearer punishments in the upcoming election bylaws for upcoming elections.
And do you feel as if a possible re-election, possible re-voting would have been a fair outcome?
So it was discussed in the elections committee – or excuse me, in the judicial committee. They found that having a runoff election would be unfair to all the candidates because we're facing down quiet week. We're facing down finals. It's a financial burden to run. And so they thought that to do it all over again would really be unfair. It would be unfair to all the students who got out there and actually voted. They might not realize there's another runoff. So ultimately, a runoff was not the most fair option as determined by the Judicial Committee.
And from reading these articles on the Siskiyou and seeing some of the Facebook comments – from supporters of both campaigns, a lot of people are kind of upset that this was such a long process to figure out. Do you feel that this was efficient and fair?
I think efficient is a word that shouldn't be used there, but it was definitely fair. And they made it through every single possible outcome, and they talked it out. And I think that it was really important for not only us, but for Rico and Emily, too, to have a fair trial. And I think that they did their job, and it's going to be our job for this next year to make those rules easier to understand for our elections committee and then our judicial branch. And by doing that, I feel like there won't have to be a process like this again.
Yeah, I'd say rather than efficiency, I'd say efficacy. It was definitely very it was a long process, but it was definitely needed. I think that they spent as much time as possible trying to come to the right decision because it was not an easy decision to make. And so, I think that they took as much time as was necessary. They came to obviously I'm a little biased, but I believe that they came to the right decision. I think it was a good showing of how deliberative our ASSOU government is and how that deliberation is really ensures the correct decision. So I'm happy with that.
And you guys kind of answered it earlier, but when someone says something similar to, rules are rules and you guys broke a rule, how do you respond to that? Do you?
So that was an interesting point because while rules are rules, that whole rules are rules sentiment wasn't actually the case. So the rule was that the elections committee was able to, if they found any infractions, they're able to invalidate an election based on their discretion, or there was some type of caveat where, they had wiggle room. They didn't have to follow strictly to the letter of the law. And so Jacob, who was the Chief Justice right now, and he brought that up multiple times. But rules are rules, but in this case, the rules that they were trying to invalidate our election on were not the rules that they had to strictly follow. There was a lot of room for interpretation. And so, that was kind of the whole thing there. I do agree rules are rules, but as far as the invalidation of our candidacy, there was so much wiggle room that there was – to say rules are rules was kind of unfair.
And through going through this process and losing time that you would have had to maybe sit down with Tori and, you know, start your reign as president and vice president, how has that affected you?
I just think it makes all the time that we have now even more valuable. So, you know, I want to be a sponge for Tori and Jane and try to take in all the information that I can over these next couple weeks and be able to use that for myself as to make myself a better president. And obviously they've had an amazing year, and I want to be able to continue that next year with our ASSOU.
Yeah, I'd completely agree with that. That was also one of the things talked about in the committee, is that, you know, we're coming down to all this short amount of time. We have to get stuff done in this short amount of time. You know, prolonging this is not going to be beneficial for whoever is president at that time. So, but yeah, I definitely agree with Colin. We're just going to have to make up for lost time and try to put in double time to make sure that moving forward, we're the best that we can possibly be.
All right. So we're running a little bit low on time right now, but can you guys just talk to us a little bit about what is going to be the next year of SOU like when you're balling with Colin?
You know, I think we're going to really try to make sure that we get things done professionally. We were talking about this earlier, get things done professionally, but also realize that, you know, we're here to make students' time a little bit better. We're here to have fun, you know, try to balance that professional aspect with, you know, we're college students. We want to make the best of this time, the short time that we have. So somewhere in the middle ground, obviously, we need to, it's a really important job, and we realize that it's a really important job. So we're just going to try to do our best to make sure that everybody really has a good time this year.
Yeah, I mean, speaking on that, we have 4 years of college, you know, to prepare us for the rest of our lives. And we want to make those the best 4 years possible. So,
all right, well, I want to just say thank you for coming in.
Yeah, man.
And we're going to play a quick track real fast. We'll come back with a little bit of what's happening this week in Ashland, Oregon on the Weekly Lowdown with Alex and Jason. Thank you for listening.
What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that Washington never told a lie. I learned that soldiers seldom die. I learned that everybody's free. That's what the teacher said to me. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that policemen are my friends. I learned that justice never ends. I learned that murderers die for the crimes, even if we make a mistake sometime. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned our government must be strong. It's always right and never wrong. Our leaders are the finest men, and we elect them again and again. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that war is not so bad. I learned about the great ones we have had. We fought in Germany and in France, and someday I might get my chance. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school.
And you're listening to KSKQ 89.5 FM in Ashland. I'm Alexander Mesadieu, and Jason Houck is with us on the Weekly Lowdown. I just want to give a big shout-out to Sunstone Artisan Bakery, who proudly supports KSKQ 89.5 FM in Ashland, Oregon. Sunstone Bakery produces handmade bread and pastries that can be found at local restaurants, retail outlets, and farmers markets. To order, call 541-488-7006. Once again, that's 541-488-7006, or email sunstonebakery@gmail.com. You can also visit sunstonebakery.com for more information. KSKQ thanks Sunstone Artisan Bakery and listeners just like you for supporting community radio here in Ashland and the Rogue Valley. All right, so we got a little bit of information that's about to happen. Jason's going to read you a couple things that are going on this week. So,
right,
to start.
Yeah, thanks, Alex, and thank you for setting up that interview with Colin and Tyler. Very, very informative, and I think they're going to do just fine navigating the bureaucracy that is student government. Yeah, so thanks. I had a couple of events. You know, we always like to tell you what's happening in our community, and coming up, this is First Friday coming up, so there's a lot going on. But I just wanted to remind people of a couple of events. One, of course, is our every Friday, the Peace Meals at the Railroad Park. The organization We Ashland and the Ashland Culture of Peace are organizing some talking circles and a free community meal for everyone that's hungry. The talking circle starts at 4 p.m. and the meal starts at 5. And it all happens at A Street at the Railroad Park between 6th and 8th Street there. On A. And again, this happens every Friday, a free community meal for anyone that's hungry. If anyone wants to join us for that meal, of course, and also join in the talking circle, which has been very powerful time where we've been able to, you know, talk about a lot of these community issues that keep kind of bubbling up. So the free community meal every Friday at 5 o'clock, but of course, come at 4 and you can join the talking circle. And that is Friday. Also on Friday, folks who might be following, we've got the son of the famous, America's most infamous prisoner, Leonard Peltier. His son will be speaking about his father and also showing a documentary film. And this is going to be Friday, June 3rd at the Southern Oregon University Hannon Library, upstairs in the Meese Room. That's on the third floor there. Great room for that, this sort of things. And Leonard Peltier has been in the federal prison for 40 years in connection with the 1975 shootout at the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, where two federal agents were killed. Since then, many people have been calling for his arrest or for his release, among those including Amnesty International, the late Nelson Mandela, and the Dalai Lama. And there's an effort to encourage President Barack Obama to grant clemency. So there'll be a speaker, will be Peltier's son, will be speaking along with this movie. And that's this Friday, June 3rd, starting at 6 p.m. at the Southern Oregon University Library there upstairs. We also have, also wanted to let you know about the Storytellers Showcase. This is over in Grants Pass at the Barnstorms Theater on Evelyn Avenue, and it's a musical event. Gene Burnett, he's a longtime Rogue Valley resident, friend of the station, written over 600 songs, and with no sign of stopping, somehow he manages to be funny and serious, cynical and tender-hearted. He's got a show performing with a number of performers. That's going to be at the Barnstormers Theater, the Storytellers Showcase, Friday, June 3rd, 7:30 p.m., and that's over there in Grants Pass. So if you wanted to listen to musician Gene Burnett, he'll be at the Barnstormers Theater on Evelyn Street starting at 7:30. And let's see. Also want to invite folks, let me pull this up real quick. We had a great interview yesterday with Paige, who's the organizer of the Eco Summit, and that's a... I'm going to pull up the information real quick for you, but that's a series of workshops, discussions, and community gathering working on building a more sustainable community. And this is folks that are gathering and working on a lot of issues, including green power, regenerative economy, creating more humane policies with our police and our community. And so folks are encouraged to go to this free event, the Eco Summit, starting Saturday. And that's Saturday, June 4th, starting at 9 a.m. And that's at the Ashland Historic Armory on Oak Street. And starting at 9 a.m., there's going to be a series of discussions and workshops and roundtable events working on a variety of issues, including how to create a more sustainable community. That's going to be Saturday and Sunday. On Sunday, they're going to be working more on solutions. I think Saturday, they'll be looking at problems, and then Sunday, working on solutions. And so the Eco Summit is a great way to plug in on how you can help transition our economy into the 21st century. And that you can find out more about that at theecosummit.com. And, of course, Saturday, June 4th and Sunday, June 5th from 9 to 6 each day at the Ashland Historic Armory. All right. And let's see what else I got. One more thing, a couple more things. I wanted to, we have a report of a missing resident, someone who's missing and at risk. 32-year-old Joshua Dillon of Phoenix, Oregon. He's been missing since Monday, Memorial Day. He's delusional, having anxiety issues when he walked away from his mother's apartment in Phoenix, Oregon, in the middle of the night. He's 5'9" his height, weighs about 150 pounds, with very short hair. He's likely along the greenway or in the woods, probably trying to avoid people. There is a missing persons report filed with the police, who are also looking for him. We have no way of knowing, his family doesn't know if he's heading south to Ashland or north to Medford, so folks that are on the lookout for Joshua Dillon in our community, he's 5'9", 150 pounds, 32 years old, short brown hair, and probably having a very bad time right now. There's encouraging folks to call 911 or the Phoenix police phone number, which is 535-1113, but probably 911 would be the best call. Keeping an eye out for Joshua Dillon. He's missing and at risk in our community. All right, and finally, one last thing I wanted to talk about. This was came out today from the city of Ashland, running, reminding folks that now is the time, as we're getting into the summer and fire season, that it's critical that Ashland residents keep their weeds and grasses cut short. This prevents the spread of fire in the case in case that happens. And we do have a requirement in the city that your grass be kept no more than 4 inches in height. And that's going to happen starting June 15th. So days are heating up. Ashland Fire and Rescue reminding folks to cut your weeds and grasses no more than 4 inches tall and keeping it short throughout the fire season. And it's required by City of Ashland code. So by June 15th, and this applies to your property, park rows, and any right-of-ways abutting your property. So there is, do your part and cut your grass. If you want to see more about the policy, you can go to the website ashland.or.us/weed abatement. And that's, of course, an announcement from the City of Ashland to remind folks to keep their grass cut short. It's coming up on 10:53. It's at 11 o'clock. We're going to be bringing you alternative radio. I want to let folks know that if you have an announcement, a public service announcement, an event, call to action, a missing cat, missing person, just let us know and we'll let you know. 541-482-3999 is the number, or give us an email to info@kskq.org. All right, that's all I got today.
That was another great episode of the Weekly Lowdown.
That's right.
We got a track coming up for you and until we can get to the next show.
Right. And we'll be back again next week, always. I encourage folks to check out the website, kskq.org, and where you can find out all the schedule and what's happening.
All right. I'm Alexander Macedew.
This is Jason Houck.
And thank you for watching the Weekly Lowdown.
Yep. Thanks.
Sunbeams through the pastures, climbing fences with muddy shoes. Hear the wind crying, or is it laughter? I guess it's up to me to choose. Starlings and ravens on the persimmon tree, black branches stretch towards the sky. The sky is smiling, so am I.